from the crypt.
Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to episode 115 of Dads from the Crypt, Tales from the Crypt podcast. My name is Jason. I'm joined by Mondo.
Hey.
And tonight, we're joined by two wonderful returning guests. First is our fun aunt Whitney. Hello. And the second is not the director of Avengers Endgame. Sorry to disappoint everyone, but his name is Joe Russo. Welcome back.
Thank you, guys. Glad to be back.
Thanks for coming on.
115 episodes, like...
It's a lot of episodes, guys.
That's
you know how many times I've almost quit and I'm still here? Like,
gotta retire.
That's not even counting our interview episodes, too. Jeez. This is just like full on.
So 5,000.
So, yeah, if you kind of hold on, it'll be much higher. Yeah, 5,000. 3,000.
Feels that way sometimes.
I know. All right, so this is our Halloween episode. We're going to be reviewing Trick or Treat, but before we get to that, I just want to give our guest a moment to catch up. Whitney, what you've been working on, anything you want to plug?
You know, just doing Oh My Horror. OhMyHorror.com is my 52-week movie challenge, so essentially a different movie theme every week. You can join in anytime. There's even a submission form if you want to, you know, watch along with this movie challenge. You can submit your letterbox list. I think right now we are in Vampire Week. Like the month of October is more like last week was witches. Now we're vampires. When this comes out, it'll probably be like Halloween themed movies, which Trick or Treat is a perfect movie for Halloween.
All right. And Joe, the writer's strike is over. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, I can finally go back to work and you know, selling screenplays again, hopefully. it was a long summer, guys. It was a long summer. What's that?
As in, hopefully you compensated fairly now for that.
Yeah, get paid.
Yeah, or at least compensated, you know, more adequately.
Period?
Period, honestly.
Yeah, no, it was a long summer. It was a very successful campaign. You know, as of this recording, the actors are still on strike, though. So that's the industry isn't quite back to where we would like it to be. I've got two movies that are kind of just, you know, frozen in space waiting for SAG to resolve their issues, which is, you know, they need to get a fair deal, too. But it's still kind of frustrating just watching those projects sit there on ice. but yeah, you know, just getting back into the groove, starting to remember what it was like to take meetings with producers and executives and be like, oh yeah, this is what I used to do, not just walk in circles with picket signs.
You really got your steps in, though.
I did, but not as many as you would think, because I was a strike captain, so I had like other duties other than just walking in circles. So I didn't quite, you know, lose as much weight as I had hoped to this summer.
I also think
Drew Carey buying us lunch at Swingers every day was probably had something to do with that too.
That's cool of him, though. I'm glad that it was cool to see.
Oh my god! He was a godsend.
That's amazing.
It was amazing what he did. Yeah.
There's definitely how people acted, I think, during that strike makes me think, you know, more highly or less of them.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of that.
That's a good barometer.
I won't name names, Drew Barrymore, but, you know.
Different Drew.
The other Drew.
The two Drews.
I was trying to figure out what rhymes with Drew so I can make up a name. I couldn't think of a word name that rhymes with Drew.
Brew Darrymore.
In a world of Drews, be a Drew Perry and not a Drew Barrymore.
That's a soundbite right there. That's I'm just kidding. Somebody sued. It was cool seeing though some of the celebrities, I don't know, The Rock was sending food to people. And, like, I think Bill Burr said he sent everybody donuts one morning. It is cool to see like celebrities who have the money to help support everybody.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I was at one of the smaller studio lots, so we didn't get quite as much love from the celebrities, but we had our fair share of things. Like, you know, like David Goyer, the writer of the Dark Knight, sent a food truck one day, you know, like, so we got the showrunner of Riverdale sent a taco truck one time. Nice. So, you know, like we had our share of free food. And then I worked with a charity group, and they raised some money and they brought food around. Like, they would bring sandwiches and stuff. And it was amazing. Like, there was awesome. Just to see like the generosity of just everyone out there. Even writers who aren't in the WGA yet were like, they were organizing like pizza funds on Twitter where people could send money, and then they used the money from that they raised via Venmo and then went and bought, you know, pizzas for all the different picket lines. It was really cool to see how many people came out to support us and how many people, you know, did just incredible things. It renewed my faith in humanity a little bit, all while you know, the studios were telling us they wanted us to lose our homes. So it was a weird emotional balance. But luckily, you know, I had the day the strike ended, this big genre film festival in LA, Beyond Fest, started. And I basically just like lived there for 2 weeks and saw a lot of cool movies. Nice. I got to see James Cameron in person. I got to see Guillermo del Toro in person. Nicolas Cage in person. It was awesome. So like, it kind of was like, oh yeah, this is why I love movies. But I'm really excited to be here for the Halloween episode. Jason very kindly saved a masterpiece of a movie for me to come on and talk about. And, you know, I'm just like, this is a movie I love, and I'm excited to just geek out about it with you guys.
Excellent. Well, it's
spoiler alert. I don't think any. I think we're gonna be very I'll be very positive.
I hate this.
Oh no! What?
Well, it's funny that you were talking about like things getting tabled, because I mean, talking about films that have been tabled, Trick or Treat. I mean, took forever to be released. Really?
I don't know. Oh, nice. All right. I have it teed up. So again, we're talking Trick or Treat tonight. Technically, it debuted at various film festivals in 2007 and was supposed to get a theatrical release, but Warner Brothers decided to hold off and dump it on DVD, straight to DVD, no theater release officially in 2009.
It did get an official theater release this year, actually.
Last year. When did it actually come out on video? Was it 2009?
2003.
2009. I don't have
the date. 2 years later, it just sat on the shelf.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where, like, even if you go to the conventions, you could find, like, bootlegs kind of things were kind of leaking around. Or you can go to, like, certain, like a Beyond Fest type of convention. It's kind of a mythical thing. And the behind-the-scenes story had a lot to do with the troubles behind Superman Returns. Directed by Bryan Singer, produced this, and remember, it was written by Michael Dougherty, who directed this movie. I think they're just kind of on Warner Brothers' shit list, and they decided to take it out on this movie for whatever petty reason.
I mean, it's also kind of interesting because you go back to 2003 when House of 1000 Corpses came out, and I was hearing about that movie in high school. Like, he finished that movie years ahead. I think in the 2000s there was like this reluctance from studios to take a chance on horror, whereas I think those movies, if they were made today, like, they'd have no problem getting distribution and getting out there, especially with the amount of avenues we have to consume media nowadays.
You'd be surprised. I can relate to this movie a little bit because of that. So I had a movie that is currently in limbo and has been in limbo for a little while. It's done, you know. I actually just screened it for some friends last night, kind of like bootleg style. But you know, we don't know when it's going to come out, you know. And it's an insanely frustrating place to be.
I couldn't.
But I think, like, I, yeah. yeah, Yeah, no. So I can only empathize with Michael Dougherty on this, and but it is really amazing to see kind of how Trick or Treat came back from this kind of setback, and has literally become probably, in my estimation, the biggest Halloween classic since, you know, maybe Hocus Pocus, and maybe even Halloween itself.
I mean, you know? Don't forget about Halloween Town. I'm with you. Okay.
Yes, you're right. Yes, so the four pillars of Halloween. Yes.
I was saying, we can't leave out Adam Sandler's Hubie Halloween either, because that's
say that. Have you ever met Michael Dougherty?
I have met Michael Dougherty. Yep. We had him on the first season of the podcast I produced, Postmortem with Mick Garris. Right. We had him on right after he finished shooting his Godzilla movie. And I feel like he was still jet lagged from his flight back, and but he was awesome. And I was really happy to do it because that was our Halloween episode that year. So it felt like, you know, he was the right guest for it. And then, you know, most recently, the last time I saw him was last year at Beyond Fest. They screened Trick or Treat in a 1,000-seat theater, and it was incredible. It was like a rock concert. I mean, everybody who was there loved this movie. And, you know, it's just, I do wonder sometimes if it had just been released, you know, no drama, would we have, you know, sought it out, and would it have become this kind of fascination, this cultural fascination? I don't know.
I do think it did build up a mythology almost behind it, but I do think the quality of the movie would have propelled it either way.
Yeah, I hope so.
But I do think the excitement for it was probably bigger because of that. But I think it still would have been very successful. I saw Michael Dougherty at Monster Palooza, where he premiered the new Godzilla King of the Monsters trailer. It was the first trailer that showed King Ghidorah.
Nice.
And they actually played it twice because everyone started chanting, play it again. And he did a Q&A, and someone asked, are you going to do Trick or Treat 2? He's like, well, if enough people go see my other movies.
That's why I went in theaters, because I was like, no one would go with me, which is fine. I love a solo movie trip, but I was like, I'm going to this because I want a Trick or Treat 2 really badly.
I feel like he's been teasing that forever.
I know.
And I'm getting a little tired of getting teased. I do have one other Michael Dougherty story if you want to hear it, which I don't know why I didn't start with this. The first time I met him was actually before Postmortem. It's the only reason I had his email address to get him on Postmortem. There was actually there's a Ray Bradbury story called Halloween Tree.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I had found out that the rights were available to that story. And so I reached out to Michael Dougherty, and I was like, I wonder if he likes this, you know? And I was like, would you want to do a Halloween Tree movie? And he was like, yes, absolutely yes. And we had a meeting at the production company I was working at, and it was a wonderful meeting, and he was so excited about it. But my boss at the time, he was a little gun-shy about plunking down the money for the rights before we knew we had a filmmaker of note interested. And in the time between checking on it and having the meeting with Mike, the rights got scooped up.
Ugh.
And that was adventures with the Halloween Tree.
And it's not even there's no Halloween Tree movie.
No, nothing ever got made from it. Yeah, I know. It's so frustrating. Every year or two I check in and I'm like, are the rights available again? They're like, nope, they still got it. And I'm like, who has the friggin' rights? And they're just sitting on it for 10 years now.
Elon Musk.
Probably. Wouldn't surprise me. Exactly.
All right. We're going to get into it. So this is kind of not a traditional anthology per se, where it's almost more like a Pulp Fiction, which I don't know what you call that, what term that
there is. It's not an anthology.
The stars are more interwoven.
It's an anthology.
Well, Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's an anthology, but it's more, well, usually the anthologies we've covered before are like more separate stories. There might be like one central like wraparound that's telling the stories.
Right.
But here, everything's intertwined or mixed. We're having the stories interact.
I think they call that like a really other. Good anthology is the technical term, I think.
All right. So, and so I broke it out the kind of pieces. So we'll just kind of go through each of those. All right, so we start with the what's called the opening. In the opening sequence, Emma and her Halloween-loving husband, Henry, return from a celebratory night. Emma, who hates Halloween, blows out their jack-o'-lantern before midnight against Henry's superstitious advice.
Emma sucks!
As Henry relaxes, and falls asleep in the house while watching a porno? Question mark? Emma begins carrying...
It's the tape! She says, go put on the
tape. Yeah, the tape.
I will say, she might not be cool about Halloween, but she is cool with the tape. So,
which again, thinking about, you know, having something actually on tape in the year 2007 when this came out, probably made like 2006.
It was an important question because Kel, my wife and I had this discussion before the show. What is he dressed up as? I can't tell if it's supposed to be something medieval or a spaceman or what.
I thought it was a knight.
That's what I thought at first, too. Yeah, but then she's a robot.
Her costume is so stupid for somebody also that doesn't like Halloween because you picked the most complicated costume to possibly walk around in. And I know she was walking around because we saw her later at the parade. So why?
Okay. Let me, and then we'll get
involved. The husband might have been like, just please put the robot outfit on.
All right. As Henry relaxes and falls asleep, Emma begins tearing down the decorations, but is then ambushed by and murdered by an unseen assailant. Hours later, Henry discovers her mutilated corpse on display with the decorations and a candy of some sort.
Lollipop. I don't know
what a big lollipop, big sucker, shoved in their mouth. Okay. Question. So my family wasn't like the most Halloween people in the world, but we did like the basics, but is the whole blowing out the jack-o'-lantern before midnight really a thing?
I never heard of it.
Have you guys heard of it before?
No. The first time I heard of it in this movie. I will say that it is now a part of my tradition.
Yeah. No one's using candles anymore. It's dangerous.
So, okay. I've always wondered if it was made up for the movie or if that was like some tradition I just never heard of.
Tradition that it's like based off of, but I think like some of the rules are definitely just to make like the spirit.
I mean, what's the legend of the jack-o'-lantern? Is they lit them up?
Well, they were in a turnip originally. They weren't even in a pumpkin originally.
Yeah.
Right.
Gourd.
Said, knowing Mike, I would assume that all of the Halloween mythology is pretty accurate.
That's awesome.
He goes pretty hardcore during Halloween. So
nice.
But I had never heard of it. But again, I do it now. I don't let the candle burn out before, you know. Yeah.
I mean, we know you haven't because you're here. If not, like Sam would have killed you, so it'd have been
right. Exactly. So, I mean, it always cracks me up how over the top Emma is about her hatred of Halloween, like really, like there's still people trick-or-treating while she's doing this.
Dude, so I would say I don't understand it because of my love and adoration for Halloween, but that's pretty much how I am around Christmas time at all times. Just like, fuck this holiday, fuck these lights, this jolly.
What would you on Christmas, while people are still celebrating Christmas, start taking down your tree and all your decorations?
I would love to do that. We're not talking about Christmas. I envy that.
Oh my God, Halloween.
Yeah, that's the Krampus episode, guys.
I looked it up, and it seems like the history of like the jack-o'-lantern, which and like what it was used for, was to light, you know, lost souls home. So there's probably this tradition of if you blew that out, then the soul couldn't find its way home. So I imagine maybe, you know, I can't find like an exact tradition, but it seems like since that was kind of where the jack-o'-lantern came from, it probably is like people being like, don't blow that out. Grandpa Saul can't get home or something. You
know, that's in Dios de los Muertos, in Mexico, all your candles, everything you leave out as offerings to the dead because the dead are supposed to come back. And yeah, makes sense.
It's a fire hazard, though.
I think the thing that bugs me the most about that scene isn't that she blows out the jack-o'-lantern. It's that she starts putting away their Halloween decorations on Halloween nights because her mom is coming the next day and she's going to be mad when she sees it. I'm like,
her mom
who shows up on November 1st and is mad and that the
she's a Jehovah's Witness.
Well, also look at all the neighbors, all their decorations. It's not like they're the only also, house on the block. She's offended by Halloween decorations.
Like, go watch your tape and go to bed and get up early. Like, what time is your mom arriving that you don't have like an hour? And it's going to take you time. It's not like 2 seconds of bringing a pumpkin in. Like,
they went hard. He went decorations. Hard.
Clearly, she probably had nothing to do with that.
He went hard.
Again, Jehovah's Witness, that's my theory. She never got to grow up doing Halloween, but she still wants a relationship with her mother. Mm-hmm.
So then we kind of get like a little a nice little cartoon intro, kind of comic book style, very like EC Comics, a little Creepshow style. That's always fun. I always like that. That kind of gives us like hints of what's
coming. Have
y'all
read the comic or the graphic novel?
I must have read it a long time ago.
It's good.
You missed at the very beginning, Jason. Though there's the trick or treat commercial.
The video,
how to trick or treat when you're a kid.
Yeah,
it's great. I think it like perfectly sets the mood. You know.
Now per IMDb, that was made for the trailer, and Michael Dougherty liked it so much he decided to put that in the movie.
That's
kind of cool. For as much as people bag on trailers, it's kind of cool when the trailer, like reaction to the trailer, improves.
Movie. Sonic of the Hedgehog was basically saved because of backlash to the trailer.
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of want to see that version.
And for the record, it was a good movie. I actually really enjoyed that movie.
I'm really glad they did that.
Hot take: I like the Sonic movies better than Mario.
Sonic movie is really good. I hate Gamer Lashback, but that time they were correct. So I'm glad that they changed it.
I read about the backlash. I'm like, okay, are these just people like nerding out to a level they shouldn't be? Then I watch a trailer. I was like, oh yeah, that's like I'm on the petition, signing the petition. Like, fuck this.
All right, then we move on to the principal. At least that's what it's called on the Wikipedia.
Principal.
Charlie, an overweight child who vandalizes jack-o'-lanterns, is caught stealing candy from an unattended bowl left by his school principal, Stephen Wilkins. Seemingly taking the offense in stride, Wilkins offers Charlie a candy bar while lecturing Charlie about the importance of respecting Halloween rules and traditions. Charlie gradually feels more unwell until he begins to vomit chocolate and blood. As Charlie dies, Wilkins reveals that he laced the candy with cyanide, remarking, "You should always check your candy." While clumsily attempting to hide the murder, he hands out candy to trick-or-treaters, including Sam.
He's a little burlap sack boy with a pumpkin head.
And he's an ancient deity.
That's right. He's the soul of Samhain.
Okay, he might be an ancient deity, but I'm just not going to be afraid of something wearing a footy pajama.
Actually, he doesn't have a pumpkin head. Yeah. I was watching Dark Harvest last night, so I got pumpkin head on the brain. But he is a little burlap sack boy. No,
he has a pumpkin head under his
That's right. Sack. Under his sack.
Yeah.
This is what he looks like, friends.
That's right.
All right. Wilkin attempts to bury Charlie in his backyard along with the body of another victim, who I guess is his wife?
I think that's the assumption.
So it's interesting because we're talking about the same thing, but there's like a clown arm. Maybe she must have been dressed up as a clown.
Mm. Wait, or maybe it's just like
there's two bodies in the grave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a body before he throws the other body in.
The kid also, by the way, just a side note, the kid's from Bad Santa. Like, I feel like those are the only two movies he ever did, or it's like Bad Santa and this, and I rewatch these movies all the time.
I love Bad Santa.
Bad Santa, believe me, has its issues, you know, especially nowadays. But but he is. That kid has like he's a comedic genius. He has comedic timing.
I love that kid.
But the way he delivers his lines.
But like, I feel like he has an outsized importance in my life because he hasn't done anything since, really. But yet I see him and I rewatch these movies with him in it all the time.
I hope he's making just like good, like not maybe he's probably not making like a multimillionaire off royalties. I hope he's got a good living off royalties and he's just enjoying his life.
I hope so too.
Okay. Wilkins is continually interrupted by his young son, Billy, and his cankerous elderly neighbor, Mr. Krieg, and Mr. Krieg's dog, Spite. The other victim turns out to be alive and struggles in his sack, forcing Wilkins to violently beat him to death with a shovel before anyone can discern the noise. When Wilkins returns indoors, he briefly notices that Krieg is screaming for help at the window. Wilkins brushes him off before something seems to attack him. Wilkins guides Billy downstairs to carve a jack-o'-lantern, holding a knife behind his back. After some hesitation, Wilkins appears to stab Billy. However, Billy is unharmed and is revealed that the knife was plunged into Charlie's severed head and the jack-o'-lantern they are about to carve.
It's a good twist.
This segment has the best quotes. Charlie Brown's an asshole is like the best thing that he yells. And it makes me laugh every single time. And as you mentioned, the way that line is delivered is just so good. And I also love, don't forget to help me with the eyes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That kid is
so cute. And he's like, Billy Wilkins.
He's a little moppet. Because you're like, if I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, yeah, super that kid's gonna fucking,
you should still be concerned for that kid at the end. Because it's very sad.
I was thinking about the Charlie Brown as an asshole line. In Krampus, the kid really wants to watch Charlie Brown. I thought that was like a really interesting dichotomy between these two Michael Dougherty holiday horror movies. Is one little kid thinks Charlie Brown's an asshole, and the other one can't wait to watch Charlie Brown. So I think it's like it's both sides of Mike's personality coming through.
He's like, Charlie Brown Halloween sucks, but Charlie Brown Christmas is good.
I do find it very funny that Wilkins is trying to get the dog off his back, so he breaks off a finger and throws it to him. Like that's not gonna come back
as evidence somehow.
Not if the dog eats
or like draws suspicion.
True.
But you know, sometimes dogs don't finish something and they leave
not
it.
Not my dog.
Someone sees a human figure laying around, it's gonna raise some suspicion.
Feels very loose for someone who is clearly a serial killer.
Hey, serial killers sometimes make mistakes, and that's how they get caught.
Well, he makes a mistake, all right. We'll get to that. This is a very fun, it's very playful. What's his name? Dylan?
Dylan Baker?
Dylan Baker.
He's that guy.
Yeah, he just has like that creepy... Yeah, he's just like a creepy demeanor over like a really white bread looking guy.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever played like a normal, nice man.
Mm-hmm.
He's very like creepy.
He's got a very fun role coming up in the new Nick Cage movie, Dream Scenario.
Is it the A24 one?
Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. It's a very cool movie. Highly recommend.
Yeah, the trailer looks fun.
Yeah, and the boy puking out that like chocolatey, bloody vomit.
And it's so over the top. That's so the one part much. Of the
movie my wife can't do. My wife is always like, oh god, lower the volume, or she goes in another room. Like it's too much for her every time.
And that was the always check your candy rule.
Yes.
So was the principal just wait? So I guess the principal came up behind him. So he's just like waiting in his car for that specific child to come up to his house.
I think it was any child who broke the rules of only take one piece of candy.
Yeah.
Also, that child sucked. He was like knocking over people's pumpkins. Well, so
yeah.
I don't really feel bad for him.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he deserved it, but
he deserved it.
He deserved that, but he deserved something.
Disrespecting Halloween.
No disrespect for Halloween. I'm
scared, but...
Get fucked.
Yeah. All right. The next segment is called Halloween School Bus Massacre.
Ooh.
A group of teenage trick-or-treaters, Macy, Chip, Schrader, and Sarah, are collecting jack-o'-lanterns when they meet devout Halloween traditionalist Rhonda.
AC Schrader.
The group... Sorry. What's up?
Nothing. I'm sorry.
The group led by Macy visits a flooded quarry where she recounts the urban legend of the Halloween school bus massacre. In the legend, the weary and resentful parents of 8 disabled children bribe their school bus driver to dispose of them. Before the driver could complete his plan, one child escapes the shackles and took control of the bus, accidentally driving it off a cliff into the quarry. The children drowned, though the driver survived. Macy leaves jack-o'-lanterns by the lake as a tribute to the deceased. The group splits up, leaving Rhonda and Chip behind. Rhonda is pursued by horrifying figures, but once she is hurt while being chased and reduced to tears, the other teens reveal that it was them all along. Disguised as the dead children attempt to prank her, all planned by Macy. Macy sucks.
Yeah.
Raider realizes that the trick has gone too far and tries to comfort the terrified Rhonda, while a bitter Macy kicks a jack-o'-lantern into the water. The actual undead kids emerge from the lake and attack the teens. Rhonda coldly abandons them to their deaths as revenge for the prank. As Rhonda leaves, she encounters Sam and exchanges a nod of respect towards him.
I have thoughts on this one. So, props to her for not giving in to the guy that tried to be nice after being a dick for all this time.
Yeah.
She's like, just fuck this guy. Like, so I like the fact that she left him behind too. I thought she was going to save him. And I was so happy when she let him die.
Probably the thing that's most dated about this whole movie is Rhonda's nickname.
Yeah, that's real.
Can't use that nickname anymore.
Real bad.
Yeah. Real
bad vibes. But yeah, the movie's real, still
real
good.
Real early aughts vibe.
And also, like, as the parent of a special needs kid, the whole murder pack thing is like,
oh, it's so awful.
Yeah.
But I will say it's filmed super well because they do that like sepia tone. The masks are really creepy, but it is so devastating and awful. And I hope all those parents feel terrible, and I hope they all die horrific deaths.
Well, it's interesting. They first mentioned there are these, they called them like wicked children, or they use some weird term.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, I thought they were just supposed to be mentally handicapped. I didn't think they were.
But that's like how they thought.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
I think it was like difficult children. Before we get too deep into it,
what was going on with the gym teacher at the party where they trick-or-treated and asked for a pumpkin, and the gym teacher's like
a weird nut.
Is the swinger party in a furry costume actually having sex in front of these kids? Like,
yeah,
and the mom offering them alcohol.
Porky.
These are not just like these seem like more like close to at least to me, it seemed close to like middle schoolers or like maybe early high schoolers.
Seventh, eighth grade. If there's still like kind of trick or treating, that's like middle school age, where it's like we're not really trick or treating. We're doing this like pumpkin thing, but we're still dressing up. But it's like that transition of
party. It looks really fun. I don't know what's going on in there, but it looks like a good time.
First, she offers them alcohol when they come to the door. She's like, "You guys want a drink? I won't tell them." Like.
Sounds like
that's terrible parenting.
Sounds like some parents I knew growing up in small towns who were like, if you're going to drink, drink at my home at least. And it's like, I don't know if you should encourage that still. But they exist out there.
She was like, give them a drink and send them on their way or invite them into their swinger party.
She needs, either way, she needs to be investigated.
Really great parenting.
And I like that the kids are sitting there collecting jack-o'-lanterns in honor of UNICEF.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to help those kids with your rotted pumpkins.
Have you guys ever done any charity work for UNICEF?
No.
No.
I have.
No.
Did you trick or treat for UNICEF?
I got roped into it once. My old boss, the same one who blew the Michael Dougherty Halloween tree thing. He had me, it was actually a really cool opportunity. I got to direct Ewan McGregor for like a little UNICEF spot, which is kind of cool.
that is one handsome man. That is a handsome guy.
Yes.
Yeah. He read a Hans Christian Andersen story for charity. And so basically I just basically hit, you know, record. Like, that was about all the directing I needed to give him. He was a pro, you know? But I got a nice photo with him after, so that's kind of cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Anyway, So whenever I hear her say they're getting pumpkins for UNICEF, I think of my time with Ewan.
Mm-hmm. I bet Ewan McGregor would have given them a pumpkin and not invited them to a swingers party. Don't say that.
You McGregor just seems like the kind of guy you just want to read you a bedtime story while you fall asleep. Like he's got that voice, and you're just gonna fall asleep and drift off into your slumber and think about dragons and wizards and pine cones.
Considering the awkward age difference between Anakin and Queen Amidala in The Phantom Menace, and Obi-Wan encouraging that, I don't know what he would.
That's like George Lucas's fault more than Ewan, okay? Because there was also Mark Hamill wanting to kiss Leia.
Also, I would say he's unknowingly encouraged. I don't think he's trying to set them up or anything.
this isn't a podcast about the Phantom Menace. What are we doing the Phantom Menace episode?
That'll be for our Patreon.
I want to talk about trade embargoes in space.
$666 tier. You can listen to an episode on the Phantom Menace.
No, I would totally get high as fuck and just rip the Phantom Menace. That'd be great.
No one's ever going to do it any better.
$1 let me do this.
You don't have to do it. You could just do that. You know, it doesn't have to be an episode. Live your dreams.
But so, how do some of these segments, this one especially, because once you know kind of what's happening, you've seen it enough times. How does this one stand up? Like, does it keep your interest or knowing, what the fake outs are?
This segment? The movie in general?
I think this segment might be my weakest, but I still think it's really strong. I think it's just once you know they're picking on her, I don't know, I was a bullied kid, so it's I am so glad those kids got what was going to them. And by weakest segments, one of them has to be the weakest. And somehow,
right.
And honestly, Rhonda's wig is terrible. It's so bad. So that's why it's the weakest. They couldn't have given her a better wig.
I really like Rhonda, though. I love how much Rhonda loves Halloween. I too like to carve a lot of jack-o'-lanterns. So
pumpkins.
Can relate to her that way. Yeah. Also, we both wear glasses. Her glasses falling off. I can relate to that too. That's a horrible experience. And I think Whitney's right. It's just a cathartic segment though. Watching the bullies get their comeuppance.
Just love watching. It's definitely kids get killed.
It's a slower vibe. It's a moodier vibe, but I dig it, man.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's very moody. It's very foreboding. And again, if you don't know what the twist is going to be, it's very spooky. But yeah, I think it drags on a little bit just because we know what's coming.
Going down to the bottom is what an elaborate plan too. It's very intense.
I would have liked to know more about Rhonda though. I do think she's a very interesting character.
Is she supported at home?
Yeah.
And why are they just letting her go out with a bunch of bullies she's never met before?
Yeah, where are your parents?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that when she's rallying off all her Halloween facts. It's just cool. I can hear people that are that passionate about that subject.
Yeah.
And, but yeah.
I would have been her friend.
Yeah.
Me too.
Justice for Rhonda.
I want to see one more. Yeah. I want to see Macy get
fucking Macy, dude.
I don't know.
Actors, though, pisses me off for every the kids. Time. You know, they're not little children, but really they're still old enough that you're you are shitty. You can be killed. I don't care.
All right. Let's move on to the surprise party. So again, we've been seeing different characters throughout, running into each other. So these characters in this one, we've seen before in the other ones as well. So especially Lori, played by Anna Paquin, is a self-conscious 22-year-old. She joins her sister Danielle and her friends Maria and Janet for Halloween, winding up with a Little Red Riding Hood costume. And this is one thing that I find is funny is choosing your costume the night of Halloween in the busiest town and
Absolutely
the busiest
not. There
store.
Would be nothing in there. it would be picked over. Mm-hmm. And also those are like the fanciest, nicest Halloween costumes. Those costumes have to cost like $200. Yeah. Easy. And they're just like, we're just going to wear them out. Where are your clothes? I guess it doesn't matter, but like, where you had to have come in with clothes on. I guess it doesn't matter. They're like, I don't need them tonight. They'd get ripped anyway.
Turn into werewolves.
Doesn't matter, I guess.
There you go.
Have you ever actually gotten a costume on Halloween night?
No.
Oh, God.
Because, like, the store it's stupid. Like, there wouldn't be anything. And also,
it's a madhouse, too. It's like the whole town's getting their costumes that night. And then it reminds me of people in movies, characters who put their Christmas tree up on Christmas Eve.
Or the people that do their Christmas shopping on Christmas Eve. Like, I'm sorry, you had a whole month to get ready for this.
Yeah.
those people don't have anxiety because, like, if I'm not done with my Christmas shopping 2 weeks before Christmas, I have anxiety.
I've been doing my Christmas shopping since August.
All right. While the other girls pick up their dates, Lori declines in favor of staying to enjoy the town festival instead. Later on... on the way to meet her friends, she is attacked by a hooded man dressed as a vampire. A bundle of red cloth falls out of a tree, revealing the bloodied and frightened vampire. After Lori remarks that he bit her, Lori's friends unmask the man, revealing to be Principal Steve Wilkins, who has been seeking out victims at the festival. Lori's friends shed their clothes and then their skin to transform into werewolves over Marilyn Manson's Sweet Dreams.
Yeah.
With it being her first time consuming someone, Lori transforms and devours Wilkins. Sam, sitting on a nearby log, watches as the werewolves feast on their deceased dates.
So my wife has a hot take about this segment. She thinks it should have ended the movie. She thinks the werewolf thing is how the movie should have ended. I do not agree with this.
I can see that, except for the whole...
I'm just literally putting it out here for podcasting purposes.
No, I get it. You know, you had the iconic, early 2000s, late 90s. By the way, can we stop using that song in movies, period, anymore? Like,
first off, that's a very old movie, but that is a very good song for the scene.
Oh yeah,
scene, 100%. It works for the scene. I'm especially when it was made.
I'm shouting at movies nowadays that are still using that song, like to do a trailer. When we obviously know the person that recorded that song is not the best person in the world.
He's a horrible person. Yes,
right.
He is a terrible human being. Yeah. He'd fit it in right in with Led Zeppelin.
One thing about this segment, I love the werewolf. I love the transformation. I love like how you think it's like, oh, it's my first time, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, you think she's going to be the victim. I don't get Principal Wilkins like running around with fake vampire teeth. And like, we see him like, quote unquote, kill someone earlier. It's like, with your fake teeth, like how sharp are these? She popped them out. And like, why is he doing that? Is he like just trying to kill people in all these multiple ways? Like you're killing kids with candy, you're killing clowns, you're killing maybe your wife, you killed your wife. Like what is his deal? It's a weird like tie-in.
I think he's just a lonely widower who's going to a little party to try to find some.
Why are you killing someone with fake teeth?
My take on it is that he's just going for it tonight. He's lost. He's pretty much gone out of his mind and it's just like going balls to the wall. Like I think he literally killed his wife like very recently. And now he's just like, fuck it, I got nothing left. I'm just gonna, you know, go live out all my deranged serial killer fantasies.
I think that's good, pick that man that was dressed up as a baby, which like that was just fucking rude and disrespectful.
I do love the foreshadowing in all of this, the way that her and their friends are talking about how they went somewhere and like,
oh, it's so obvious. There's a line, like, the second time you watch it. Yeah.
Well, the second time. Yeah. But the first time they're like, oh, I couldn't party because I was sick. Cause I ate Mexican.
You're
like,
you
eat Mexican food. You ate.
Oh,
but and then Mexican. Another part where they're talking about, they called Lori the runt of the litter.
Yeah. There's a lot of like werewolf lore phrasing that doesn't like pick up the first time, which is why I think this is a great rewatch film, because there's so many people in the background, the timeline's all over the place, and you can just kind of pick, and like it's like the Leonardo DiCaprio, you can like point at your screen and be like, ooh, ooh, robot in the background. That's the girl. It's going to get lollipop death.
Yeah, there's so many little details that you forget about every time or apparently miss every time, like the two bodies in the grave.
I never noticed that.
Yeah, I gotta go. I'm like, fuck, I gotta go watch it again. But I don't necessarily agree with my wife that this should be the end of the movie, but it does feel very climactic. And the werewolf transformation is incredible.
I see what your wife is saying. That this
it holds up too, you know, for being 20 years old.
I don't love werewolf movies, but I love a good transformation scene. And this is a very good one. I love seeing the skin just like
flow. I love how sexual it is I see for them.
And I see what your wife is saying, that this is a very climatic, bombastic scene, and it's kind of hard to like reset after this. But I think the next one, because it focuses on Sam, and he's kind of the icon of this. Because
you don't know anything about him, what he's doing. And I also think that if the next segment had like come before this or any other place, it would just feel... I get what she's saying. Because the next segment could be kind of a downer, but... Mm-hmm. I also love it. Like, I love the yellow. But
the way it ties into the whole mythology of the town, though, too, is why I feel like you always had to end on this one, this next one.
Yeah.
Right.
So, to Jason.
Yeah. Sorry to your wife. I don't agree with her.
I told her I didn't agree either, guys.
It works on different levels. I see what you're saying.
If tomorrow you're like, what the fuck did I say? Just let me know and I'll edit it all out. It's okay.
I love my wife, but I'm the screenwriter.
Damn.
Next time he comes up, he's going to be single. No,
newly divorced Joe Russo. She's free, ladies.
No werewolves, hello. Please apply.
Yeah.
All right. Our final segment is titled Sam. So we kind of go back in time a little bit to see what was going on with Mr. Krieg. He's a curmudgeon-y Halloween hater who dresses up his dog to scare off trick-or-treaters from his doorstep.
Real fast, that dog is as fuck. That is a cute dog. God damn.
Also, can we just say, it's Brian Cox.
Brian Cox.
Yes.
It's Brian fucking Cox.
Without Brian Cox's monkey
jail. I think of it every time I watch this movie.
I will say that it is very fun for people who, like, were really introduced to Brian Cox with Succession to show them this movie over the last couple of years and watch them be like, holy shit, you know?
Now it's very unexpected.
I mean, off topic too, there's a little known movie called Red. Not the action movie, but it's based off a Jack Ketchum novel. And Jack Ketchum is like the fucking love. If you like reading horror fiction, John Ketchum is the man.
Jack Ketchum.
Like literally he passed away I think 2 years ago but literally my favorite author of all time. I had a point. I lost my point. But anyway, Brian Cox stars in the movie and the edible kicked in and it's a different strain that I'm used to. I'm sorry. I'm super giggly right now. I just want to fucking laugh at everything. But the fuck, dude? Like I tried a different it was on sale for Friday the 13th.
You're talking about sale. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Brian Cox, there's a sale right now. Hashtag
ad. Brian Cox, Green Dispensary, Las Vegas, great dispensary. Brian Cox in Red, based on the novel by Jack Ketchum, is phenomenal, and it's criminal that more people haven't seen that. Definitely seek it out. It's definitely got horror elements to it. Animal cruelty in this. It's about this is not spoilers, but it's about someone killing the man's dog, and he's now gonna take matter in his own.
Oh, so it's kind of like John Wick. It's like John Wick. John Wick ripped it off.
The thing about Brian Cox, just to continue on the Brian Cox vamp, we were totally derailing Jason. It's driving him nuts.
You go off on the Cox.
The other thing, and like, you know, people who are just like, oh, Logan Roy, right? Like, I'm like, did you know he was also Hannibal Lecter? And then their like brains explode.
That is a great scene. That scene is amazing.
I look, Manhunter, I adore. They screened it at Beyond Fest this year. I could not get a ticket for the life of me, and it's, I think, will forever be like one of my great regrets. Like, Michael Mann was there. It was his personal 70 millimeter print. Anyway, but that's still an open wound.
That movie's so good, and it's so fun, like, introducing people to have never seen it but are big fans of Silence of the Lambs. Because they're both great movies, but they're so different and have different tones. Right. And but that's not a knock on either one.
Hey, did you like Red Dragon? Do you want to watch a better version of it?
Yeah. I love that movie. And Joel Grissom from CSI, I forgot the actor's name. Gil.
Yes. Yeah. He's great in it. Okay.
Great.
Good soundtrack too. Really good.
Okay, right. Back to the tree.
And the wheelchair scene. Holy shit.
Yeah. That's a good scene. Okay. As the night proceeds, Krieg encounters escalating phenomena. The house is egged. The lawn is filled with ornate jack-o'-lanterns, and the hallways and ceilings are scrawled with Halloween and Samhain greetings.
Samhain.
Krieg is ambushed.
Samhain.
Sorry.
You're going to die.
I can't read and talk.
Sam's going to
Dr. Loomis in Halloween 2 does say Samhain.
I know.
If you are not watching the YouTube version of our podcast right now, you need to do so and just see Whitney's look of disgust on her face as Jason spit those words out of his mouth.
That's your TikTok.
I know. I need like a soundboard. With Dr. Loomis quotes on it.
I immediately want to give him shit because that's just what I do. But I saw your face.
Okay. Krieg is ambushed by Sam. In their struggle, Krieg eventually managed to unmask his assailant, whose head resembles a grotesque hybrid of a skull and a jack-o'-lantern. Krieg shoots Sam several times with a shotgun, apparently killing him, but only pumpkin guts come out. I love that effect.
Yes.
His little hand comes off and it crawls back with a little pumpkin guts on it.
It's got like little pumpkin guts coming out.
He's so cute.
All right. However, Sam begins to reanimate and incapacitates and corners Krieg. Instead of killing him, Sam impales a candy bar in Krieg's lap. Complete.
Okay. That yell, though, that Brian Cox does, where he's like,
Okay, satisfied,
so
Sam spares a confused Krieg and ominously departs. Meanwhile, photographs burn in the fireplace, revealing that Krieg was the driver from the school bus massacre.
Bum, 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 bum.
Dun, dun, bum, bum, bum.
Then a heavily bandaged Krieg gives out candy to trick-or-treaters. On his front porch, he witnesses other characters from the film mill about observing Halloween traditions. Billy sits on his father's front porch, waiting for him to come home, but he never will.
Aww. Orphan,
handing out candy and enjoying himself. Rhonda crosses the street, casually pulling her wagon filled with jack-o'-lanterns. Lori and her friends drive by, laughing to each other. Emma and Henry arrive home, and Sam witnesses Emma prematurely extinguishing jack-o'-lanterns and moves in to kill her. Krieg, are you laughing at premature jack-o'-lanterning?
Premature extinguishing.
Krieg answers another knock at the door, only to be greeted by the undead children from the bus who brutally tear him apart as revenge for their murder as we cut to black.
Do you think that them going to the kids going to the like mine? Was it a mine? It wasn't a mine. What is that called? A quarry.
A quarry.
A
quarry.
That stirred up the ghosts to go after and kill him because it's been a long time.
Yeah, maybe.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I like that. Like they did summon the spirits.
Yeah.
Well, didn't we say earlier that jack-o'-lanterns help guide spirits back, and didn't Rhonda carry her jack-o'-lanterns back from the quarry with her? So I don't know.
She had a lot of jack-o'-lanterns too. Yep.
That's a good. Ooh, I like that. Good
I'm just putting that together now. I'm riffing, guys, but it makes a lot of sense.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I like it.
So he spared Brian Cox when he stabbed him with the lollipop.
He stabs him with like a razor, right? Or the lollipop.
He stabs him with the lollipop.
But wants the candy.
He has the lollipop that he's going to that he's going to kill Emma
and
with.
He goes into the candy bar, later. And that's when he's like, oh, takes a bite of candy and okay.
And just walks away.
Was that
away.
Basically him just saying, oh, you gave me candy, we're good now?
I think so.
Because I love as a nice touch that when other people came to the door, Brian Cox is like, fuck, I have to give him candy. And he's obviously giving him like the old people candy that they have on a coffee table somewhere in an urn that nobody knows how it got there. Yeah, it's fucking restaurant mint.
Those are good. Oh,
that's exactly what it is. It's Sam. He didn't give Sam,
but yeah,
until he wants gives candy. Sam a treat.
No, because afterwards,
yeah,
he'll give you a treat.
Because afterwards, when the people come by, he starts handing out a ton of candy to each person.
His that's lesson. Yes.
Yep. But I just love it because the candy stuff he just found like in his house. Like, you know, like go buy candy.
He's just
for
like,
kids.
Here's a pillow mint. Here's a half wad of gum. Some saltine crackers.
We are a full size candy bar house, so that bullshit wouldn't fly here.
Big spender there.
Right, dude,
it's one of my joys. It's one of my joys in life. Sorry, I'm gonna spend some money on it.
I don't get trick or treaters.
So yeah, what do we think of the whole Sam attack?
I was just gonna say the action in this sequence is great. Like, it's really well shot, choreographed, fun, and Sam crawling along the walls. And I think probably the most epic shot though is when like the pumpkin ignites in the bedroom and it's got
I love that photo.
Writing on the walls. It's such an iconic moment.
I also like that you get to see the perspective of this going along with like Mr. Wilkins in the backyard, and like he's like giving the finger and all this shit, and he's like, help me, he's like, fuck you. And so you get half of it, and then you see the other half and with like the dog and the barking and all these things. And so it makes it really fun again to watch it more than once, but just kind of to see. If you watch it a second time, you can look in the background and realize, like, when he's yelling, like, he's fucking dying, like, he's getting attacked, basically.
Yeah, no, it really brings all the stories together, which is why my wife was wrong.
Careful there.
She can't hear him right now.
In the other room right now. Oh. Yeah.
But she doesn't listen to Dads in the Crypt?
Yeah.
Well,
you know, Jason, she's a regular listener. She really is.
Okay.
Jason's going to be on social media making sound bites and tagging
her. She's listening to all 115 episodes.
3,000 with interviews.
Yeah. Yep.
3,000. But yeah, I mean, we can't state enough how just... Again, practical effects just are so much cooler. Like the whole the hybrid skull jack-o'-lantern face thing is just so fucking
He's so
great.
Cute with his little sack on his head. He's so cute without a sack on his head. I love Sam. I think he's my favorite like horror icon because this has become a like classic film, and he's adorable. Like, he's just so cute. How could I just want him on everything?
Diana Prince asked earlier on Twitter today, she asked, is Sam a Halloween icon?
Yes.
Yes.
It seemed like the answer was a resounding yes.
Yes, absolutely. I think he's not even just a Halloween icon. I think he's a horror icon. Like, I think he's among, like, I personally think, like, he's what, like, who do we have after, you got Michael, Jason, Freddy, okay, and then you've got Pinhead. Who's your next?
Victor Crowley.
I think Victor Crowley is still pretty niche.
No, I think he's definitely bigger than Mr. Crowley.
Clown?
I was the Mr.
Art
Crowley.
The Clown now, but like between
Art the Clown's
between
the
like Freddy and like Pinhead to now, it's like hard to think of somebody else. And it's only one movie. The fact of the matter is like Art the Clown has two movies.
Yeah.
Sam has one.
I mean, there's been 10 Saw movies.
Jigsaw
now,
is a horror
movies.
Icon too. But, so Jigsaw's puppet more than anything. Billy the puppet.
But yeah, I'm thinking from the 2000s, the biggest horror icons are definitely Sam and Jigsaw, maybe Samara from The Ring. But
yeah, I wouldn't even think of her as one. Like, I'm thinking about people you see on shirts and stuff.
Sam's a fun character, and I think what the telling point of how great it is here we are talking about a movie that came out 15 years ago, and we're still excited at the potential of a sequel because we still want to see more of this character and more of these stories. So it's
it's criminal that he hasn't had anything else.
Take your Godzilla money and make my second one. I do will say, and we're not talking about it, but I also love Krampus, so I just like want Mike Doherty's. If you don't make Trick or Treat 2, that's fine. Go make go make Valentine's Day. Go make Arbor Day horror. Go make same like Leprechaun movie. Maybe don't do that one. That feels wrong.
I really do love the fact that he didn't make a Trick or Treat sequel. He made a Christmas horror movie next. Like, I think it's kind of a really special thing. And honestly, both of these movies are in my holiday rotations now.
Every year.
Oh, yeah.
And the comics, the graphic novels are also really good. I have both the Krampus and Trick or Treat, and it's, you get to see the comics like the beginning of the credits, and it's really cool.
All right. So as we wrap up, why don't you give any final thoughts, and which is your segment MVP? Joe, you can start us off.
Oh my gosh. I didn't even think about it. I would have to say which segment was my MVP. I think the one that I probably enjoy the most, probably mostly because I usually fall asleep after this point when I'm rewatching it, but it's probably Dylan Baker and his son and the carving of the jack-o'-lantern. I think that still might be like the one I watch. Well, it's definitely the one I've seen the most without falling asleep. But that's not a knock on the movie. That's more on just like, I start this movie too late.
I hear that. It's like I can sleep blanket through anything.
Like a warm blanket. I want to wrap myself in it. Like, it's just perfect Halloween vibes. And,
hey, I fell asleep to Eraserhead twice. I can sleep through anything.
There you go.
Yeah. That movie just like gives me a stomach ache.
Apparently it lulls me to sleep. I'm just like, oh, the sweet sound of David Lynch's noise.
Shudder did a really cool, how they do those like jack-o'-lantern Yule log things?
The Gulag, yeah.
Isn't it a Trick or Treat one year?
Yeah.
And it was just the one year because they only had the license for like a year. Ugh, and it was great.
I must have missed it.
I fell asleep to that all the time. Anyway.
That's awesome. All right. Mondo.
I forgot the question.
Do you like the movie?
Overall thoughts and segment MVP.
Like, if I had to give it out of 5, I'd say 5. So yeah, it's okay. one of my favorite things, and I mentioned earlier, Hubie Halloween. The reason why I like that movie is I'm a sucker for Halloween set pieces. And this whole movie is Halloween set pieces. And I love like literally every second of the screen, and it makes me nostalgic and it makes me happy. So what I'll say is this should be on everybody's list. And for if you're like us and old, if you're over 40, you don't want to watch a movie that's 2 hours long, right? Who wants to watch? Like, Martin Scorsese is an amazing director, but fuck, dude, like 3 hours, 4 hours. It's a brisk hour and 20 minutes. Everyone should watch this every Halloween, and everyone should be just sending Michael Doherty money for fucking Trick or Treat 2. Let's do it.
All right. And Mondo, which is your favorite segment?
Oh, the last one. I like the one with Brian Cox, but I just love seeing Brian Cox, the way he acts at and kind of goes over the top when needs to be over the top. And I also love the fact of him all wrapped up at the end, handy candy out. That's,
I love his yell. His yell with the candy bar just gets me every time.
He redeemed himself with Sam, but he still killed a bunch of kids.
So Sam was cool with him. Redeem yourself.
But Sam was cool with him because he's following Halloween tradition. At least he learned that. But the kids,
Sam is not God. Sam is not here to judge you for your past actions. No. Trick or treat, motherfucker. Give me a treat or I'm gonna give you a trick.
I don't care what you did. You gave me a piece of candy. We're fucking. I see you handing candy out. We're good. The kids are like.
All right, Whitney, what's your segment MVP?
I gotta agree that I love Principal Wilkins and his son, just because the yelling back and forth between the door, like out the window, just makes me laugh. So I'd have to go with that one, just because I love Charlie Brown's an asshole. I like want that on a t-shirt. I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna crochet or like cross stitch. Charlie Brown's an asshole, and put it on my wall.
That should be your next tattoo.
Oh my god, it really should be.
Charlie Brown's an asshole.
Do you have a Sam tattoo?
I don't have a Sam tattoo. I should get one.
You should get a Sam tattoo and Charlie Brown's an asshole underneath.
Fuck, that would actually be really good. Okay, Polly Pocket and then a Sam tattoo. Very similar.
There you go.
My tattoo artist is working on designing an arm sleeve for me, and that's two of the. I gave him a list of horror people that I want, but Sam is in there, and the Crypt Keeper's in there. I'm like, I gotta have those two.
Yeah, I'll need a Sam tattoo.
Nice. Yeah. So my final thought is this movie's just Halloween the vibe, like it's just dripping the vibes of Halloween. If there's any movie that will get you in the spirit, like it's like, you know, John Carpenter's Halloween and Trick or Treat. Those mm-hmm. are like the two, and, you know,
and Hocus Pocus.
Like
Halloween Town.
Yeah.
No, you're right. The though the
killers,
vibes,
but like,
it's Halloween the vibe. Like my friend's doing a horror movie every Friday night in October, and we started with Suspiria, and then we did House, and we're gonna do Barbarian. But then I was like, we need to do Trick or Treat because it's really short. We're all like going basically to a party after. And it's just like, it's the Halloween movie and it's just fun. So it's like, I want to introduce it to people who've probably never seen it and get some more trick or treat lovers out there.
Nice. My segment MVP is, I think I'm going with the surprise party, the werewolf one. Again, I don't love werewolf movies, but I like a good transformation. And this is kind of just like that, like distilled.
Has nothing and to I do like, with so much... the little Red Riding Hoods and their bustiers, though, right?
Well, it does have a cheerleader, but... but no, the transformation scene is amazing. And there's so many good little lines that like every time you pick up on one you didn't get before. In a pack one is just
I was talking about with Alyssa and on Plug It Up about Trick or Treat as well, and I can't remember what it is, but they even like the meadow they're going to is like it's like sheep's meadow or something. It's like sheep's clothing. You got to rewatch it like and pick up on it's all of cool. them because it's a movie that is better on multiple watches, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the first time is more of a visceral reaction to everything and like the surprises. And then each time after is more richer.
Yeah.
And you get look forward to your favorite parts and recognize people in the background because everybody's always kind of overlapping into each other's because it's not a sequential movie, as I would call it, where it's like out of order. It's non-linear.
It's a sandbox movie.
No.
All right. Well, that brings us to our song of the day, Mondo.
Oh. Hey.
Did you forget to do one?
No, I didn't.
And it's not going to be the song from the movie that we will not discuss.
It's not even going to be a metal song. It's going to be something a little bit different for this because it fits in. So there's a band called the Electric Hellfire Club based off the Hellfire Club, which Benjamin Franklin was a member of. Just saying. He liked his Hellfire. But... it's they do kind of like dark wave industrial Halloween kind of they've done a lot of cool covers of like they did like Slayer, South of Heaven, a bunch of other stuff they've done, and they did a EP called Trick or Treat back in the mid 90s, and the song I picked off that EP is Halloween Medley. It's a medley of some various Halloween songs. And it's really cool. It's done like it's kind of a chill, I guess, dark wave. I say dark wave like I know what that means. I don't know what that means. I think that means like dark electronic, like synth wave. Which I like synth wave. So dark wave sounds like synth wave, just scarier. So I guess that makes sense for me.
Yeah.
So
spooky.
Yeah.
Spooky synth wave.
So
spook wave.
I don't know if it's on Apple Music or Spotify, but it's on YouTube Music. So the Electric Hellfire Club Halloween medley off the EP. Trick or treat.
Thank you, Mondo. All right, going over to our Patreon pit, we have a new Patreon. Welcome, James, to the Patreon.
Thank you, James.
Welcome.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James. All right,
for our weekly Would You Rather.
Sorry.
Oh, I just wanted to say I have a song recommendation, too. It's Sweet Dreams Are Made of This by Marilyn Manson.
Tell us more about Marilyn Manson, please. We go all day.
Cutting. Anyway, all right.
Your wife's going to love this episode. All right. A weekly would you rather. Would you rather have wet socks or a rock in your shoe? While you guys ponder that, we had a wonderful Patreon named Whitney say, small rock. You can eventually take it out. Wet socks are awful and can't be fixed until you get new socks.
I had wet socks at Disneyland once, and I was so upset. Oh. Like, I had to leave. I was like, we're done. We're leaving. I'm done with Disneyland for the day.
No, I do. I have a vague, very vivid memory of, as a kid, we went to, like, Anheuser-Busch amusement park, and I remember it was raining really hard, and my socks were just soggy. It was just, like, squishy, like, walking like a
dirty sponge.
And you're, like,
your toes get wrinkly, but they're in a sock, and it's a very weird feeling.
Yeah.
I was an adult when this happened, where I left Disneyland, but still, it's incredibly upsetting to have wet socks.
I agree. I say rock in my shoe.
Yeah.
I have questions, but I will say, though, when I was in San Francisco, actually seeing Jason 10 on a Terror Tuesday, I stepped in a puddle, and I don't know what it was because it wasn't raining outside. So I threw in my sock.
Yes. The reason you don't wear open-toe shoes in the Bay Area.
They weren't open-toe. They still went in the trash can. I bought another pair of shoes at Target.
I can always tell if it's a tourist wearing flip-flops.
All right, Joe. What's your opinion on this?
Oh,
very important.
Rocking my shoe all the way.
Oh, you said rock already. Yep.
So being in Las Vegas where it's 1,000 degrees, I always wear flip flops. So so that means wet socks wouldn't affect me like 95% of the time.
No, yeah. I mean, living in Southern California, I pretty much always wear other flip flops or Keens.
I don't know the last time I wore a flip flop.
The only time I wear shoes, like if I'm being paid to go somewhere. Like for work.
Sneakers too much to like not be excited. I mean, all my outfits are planned around my sneakers half the time. So.
All right. And just to cap it off.
All right. All right. We're just talking about shoes again.
75% of our Patreons voted for small rock, while 25% wet socks. So 25% of our Patreons are Salem Masters. So that's interesting.
Weirdo.
Good for them.
All right, and then to round out the episode with our dad advice, I thought we could give some other Halloween advice, do's and don'ts, with or without kids. What's your Halloween tips? What's your go-tos?
When you're carving a pumpkin, just cut up a trash bag to carve your pumpkin on. So then you can just gather that up and throw all the guts away. And then once you've carved it, you can take like Vaseline and rub it on the inside of your pumpkin and it will last longer. Really great tip for warmer climates.
That's awesome. I never do that.
That's cool. I just like the way they look like a grandpa. I'm always carving on like the day before Halloween anyway. And it's like, I leave it in my house. Like, what am I going to do? Put it on my balcony? Like, no one's going to see it.
During the pandemic, I was carving a pumpkin a week because, you know, what the hell else were we doing? and so, you know, I got really good at carving them and I was carving some really awesome pumpkins. And a friend of mine was like, you know, because we live in Southern California and they were rotting days later. He's like, you know, there are these things called funkins where you can carve them. They're like literally like designed to be carved into. They're not pumpkins. They're fake. I don't know exactly what they're made of, but
they're almost like a styrofoamy.
It's like a styrofoam, and it definitely has a different feel. Like it doesn't feel like carving into a fruit, but I will say they look good. They hold up. I mean, they hold up great. Like they last you all Halloween. Highly recommend looking into funkins.
You can also carve your pumpkin in the bottom to make your hole. You don't have to carve it from the top and the stem and like fuck it up and then it falls in or anything. So you can just carve the hole in the bottom.
I guess since we're talking pumpkins, my advice is you can sprinkle a little bit of vinegar in and around the pumpkin to get the squirrels to stay away. Because that's my biggest issue is that we like carve our pumpkins, we leave them out, and by the time the next morning rolls around, they're all chewed up by squirrels.
All those goddamn desert squirrels I get out here in Las Vegas.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, it was 93 degrees today, so it's like, you can't even put out any vegetation.
That's why get a funkin.
Yeah. All right, Mondo? Anything you want to add?
Don't give out shitty candy to kids.
They're kids. Give them edibles. Give them weed. That's what you get for having a kid. Here's my $25 edibles. Just giving away to children.
No one's gonna. Could you imagine? Like,
no, that'd be so expensive. Like giving a child a weed chocolate bar. You're like, fuck, that was $20, dude.
Am I going to lace Halloween candy with $5 worth of drugs? Yes. No. I'm not. I guess that's some fucking bullshit. Get full size candy bars. Just give them out. Like, you'll be the hero.
Full size bars.
Amen.
Kill was like, well, I think we should be careful because last time I'm pretty sure we had a couple of the same groups come by twice. I said, fuck it. If our house is the best and they want to come back and get another full-size candy bar, they can come get another goddamn full-size candy bar.
That's effort on their part to double back. Exactly. Like, why would you not reward someone working smarter, you know, than harder?
And can I say the last few years, I've seen some older kids trick-or-treating, dressed up and probably high school age. And yeah, fucking good for them. Like,
I want to trick or treat this year.
As long as you can. That was the best part of having kids. I can trick or treat now for 18 more years.
Can I like volunteer to like take children trick or treating so I can do it, or is that like very creepy?
If you want to come down and take my kids trick or treating, you're more than welcome to.
Whitney, you might be able to do that, but like if Jason or I try to do that,
want to get some candy, child.
My name is Jason. I have a hockey mask. I'd like to take your kids trick or treating.
Somehow, Jason, the hockey mask would be less intimidating. I'm like, wacky. It's gonna be okay.
You're gonna be like those kids.
I'm like 6'4", showing you're up like at your house.
Kids that like get excited when they see, like, have you ever seen videos of kids that like see a fucking scary monster and the kid goes up and like hugs it, and I'm like, that's a good kid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we will get them therapy.
All right, well, that wraps up another episode. Whitney and Joe, thank you so much for coming. Tell people where they can find you.
Go ahead. I am Whitney Please on Instagram and ohmyhorror.com to check out my movie challenge.
Right, and you can find me on the social medias at Joe Russo Tweets and at Joe Russo Graham on Twitter and Instagram, respectively.
And what's that small other indie show that you're on?
Oh, Postmortem with Mick Garris. You can find me there.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of all known. You might hear it. It's very indie. All the cool kids.
We've interviewed a couple filmmakers you've heard of.
Here's a question. What's Mick doing for Halloween? Like, I need the Mick report.
Mick usually goes to his friend Bill Malone's house, the director of The Haunting on Hill House remake. Bill kind of goes all out, and he's kind of like right in the middle of like a peak trick-or-treating neighborhood, and so they all like sit on the porch and hang out and hand out candy and watch a movie. That's his usual go-to for Halloween.
So Jason, get us an invite to this.
If I knew, I know Al knows him, but
right now Jason is like trying to hold it together like an American Psycho. He's just so big, angry. He hasn't got an invite to any of these.
If anyone can score an invite,
Bill Malone's house for Halloween either. So,
if anyone can score an invite, though, yeah. I believe it's gonna be Jason.
Probably.
He slides into DMs well.
He shimmies on.
He's like, "Hello, I'm Jason. Would you like to go trick or treating?"
For the record, Jason.
Would you like to talk about Brian Cox? Like some Cox talk. We should do a Brian Cox tribute podcast called Cox Talks.
Cox Talks.
All right. Well, next week we'll be back to covering Tales from the Crypt episodes, starting with Smoke Rings, and we only have 5 left in the whole series.
Oh my God.
Can you believe that?
You start over from the beginning and just like do it all over again.
We're just going to change our name and everything and just start rebranding.
You know what you could do? Those new Goosebumps episodes.
Yeah, I was looking at those too. There's a lot of ideas. We're not going anywhere. I'll just say that.
Freddy's Nightmares.
Are you afraid of the dark?
Tales from the Crypt animated. Yeah. I know. Are you afraid of the dark? Have me on every episode. I bought it on Amazon Prime to watch because I can't find it streaming. And I was like, fine, I'll buy it.
It's very, very hard to track down.
We can only do it if we can think of a cool dad pun for the title. So that's going
to
be a tough
one. I used to listen to one that was called Are You Afraid of the Podcast? So you can't use that. That was very good.
Just keep Dad's
Afraid of the Dark.
On other anthologies.
Yeah,
stuff.
You're still in the crypt.
Oh, yeah. We live in the crypt.
What you could do is change the artwork as being our, change the like logo to be the font of the show, like that you're doing at the time. Like still have the classic, but like if you're doing like Tales.
Whitney just cracked it for you guys.
Yeah, just, you know, spend more money. Sign up for Patreon so we can get, so they can get more album art.
And I want to retire. Just saying.
All right. We appreciate everyone for listening. We would really appreciate if you give us a rating or review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify. Check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Happy Halloween!
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you axe for. You may get it.
Nothing, Mondo.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Happy Samhain.
Oh,
oh no.